Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 1:12 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is April 23rd. I thought we'd kick off today with Gilead Sciences. It pulled back rather sharply on the back of disappointing results from a Chinese test of remdesivir, which is its treatment that's being proposed for the coronavirus. There are some conflicting results because the initial test results came through that it wasn't efficacious, but they were unable to recruit enough of candidates to make it or to increase the sample space enough to produce statistically reliable results. So, in fact, they pulled the trial to be in the end. So, we're not really going to have those results become part of the public knowledge, and they haven't been peer reviewed yet either. But it's a measure of how much uncertainty there is and how much volatility there still remains in the market that the share pulled back so rapidly. But it was off the lows in here today, and it is continuing to hold the breakout. Then when we look at Tesla, Tesla has been among the shares that has rallied most impressively. It was down $27 in here today. Now, it has not broken down from this little range that's been holding for the last 2 weeks. But I think Tesla is an important share from another perspective. It tends to be a lightning rod for speculative interest, particularly liquidity-fueled moves, because it's a C-rated credit. In fact, I think it's a double or a triple C-rated credit. And therefore, it isn't exactly the kind of company that is going to have its bonds bought, at least not yet, by the Federal Reserve. And it is almost entirely reliant on access to additional liquidity to fund its operations. There is still, of course, the great uncertainty about how persistent its ability to make a profit is going to be, and it's the only one of the major automotive companies that has rallied so impressively off the lows it posted back in March. Therefore, I continue to think of it as a lightning rod for speculative interest and particularly liquidity fuel trades rather than anything to do really with the automotive sector in the short term. Over the medium term, it's obviously a different story, but in the short term, it's more of an indication of liquidity. And it's overbought in the short term. When we just look at it on a weekly basis, the volatility has been extraordinary. To go from $200 to $1,000, or just shy of that, in the space of about 6 months, and then to give up most of it, and then recoup a lot of it, and then now the potential here is we're going to have, at a minimum, a period of ranging to unwind the overbought condition and to suggest that we're going to have some additional just support building. It's more than likely, or the most likely scenario. Now, when we then think about what else is going on in here, well, we have companies like Facebook and Google, which have unwound oversold conditions relative to their respective trend means. Now, both of these companies, despite everything else that they're doing, are heavily reliant on advertising income. And with people staying at home, there is obviously less money being spent with the economy under duress and companies that are uncertain about what their futures are going to hold. They're spending less on advertising. So that would, I think, automatically feed through into some uncertainty. Google in particular is at a potential area of resistance. It's the upper side of the underlying range. And it's unwound 50% of its decline, and it's right in the region of the trend mean. So it's a natural area where we might anticipate some profit taking. If it can sustain a move above the $1,300 area, then that would suggest that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. There was also the news this week about Facebook taking a 10% position in Jio, which is India's biggest 4G provider. Facebook has got a clear ambition to create a service similar to WeChat. And that is something that is certainly one area where Chinese social media companies have got ahead of US-based social media companies, and it's in providing financial services. That's certainly been the case for Alibaba with its marketplace. And we're starting to see a little bit of that with Amazon, where Amazon is providing credit cards now, and it's also providing vendor finance for its associate program, but where the big prize is in consumer financing. And WeChat and Alipay, WeChat Pay and Ali Pay have both got very established businesses in the Chinese market. Facebook is longingly looking at that, and the chances are that they're going to try and roll that out first in India, and retool WhatsApp to be much more like WeChat Pay and WeChat generally. And that would therefore attempt, I would say, probably be a pretty cheap way of accessing the massive growth potential that India represents. Now, obviously, India has got some rather big challenges in front of it. The Nifty index has pulled back in a similar manner to just about everything else outside of the Nasdaq, and it continues to rebound, and it has held a sequence of higher reaction lows over the course of the last few weeks, and the lockdowns are ending. India pretty much has to end its lockdowns. It can't just remain closed indefinitely. And it does have the advantage of having the vast majority of its population under the age of 20 years old, which is a very large number of people that are less likely to be overly affected by the coronavirus. So it does have the potential to recover faster. However, the rupee has been under pressure, and it is now starting to steady. So that is probably the best news that we've seen in a while for India, that the oversold condition in the rupee may be starting to ebb. And the problem that is still outstanding, however, is in the banking sector. The rally so far has been pretty modest. Now, it doesn't mean that it can't persist, and India continues to have the benefit of a large young population and a growth-oriented domestic story. So it's not overly dependent on what happens outside of the country. And it is a country that should benefit enormously from the decline in the oil price. So there are certainly important aspects that represent, I think, long-term value opportunities in India. The question is, how much of a drag in the short term is the coronavirus likely to be? And we're probably not really going to have an answer for that until after the summer. There's probably still room for some volatility, but there is also the potential that it's going to represent more of a support building phase rather than fresh lows for a number of the emerging market countries. Now, when we then think about what's going on in Europe, the euro today was in negative territory again, but we are starting to see that the Europeans are coming around to the idea that they're going to have to provide a lot more stimulus. And the fact that government bond spreads have been rallying over German bunds over the course of the last few days, that is, I think, a clear indication that the market is demanding at this stage that a lot more assistance be provided. There is obviously the existential question of who's going to provide that stimulus. Eventually, Europe is going to move towards a central issuing body for sovereign debt. When we think about the debt to GDP ratios of the periphery versus the core, the average of them is that debt to GDP in the Eurozone is about 90%. Of course, it is considerably less in Germany and considerably higher in Italy. And if we are, and of course, the whole point of the austerity program at the beginning, all the way before, almost a decade ago, was to allow the debt to GDP ratios of the periphery to trend back down towards the mean of the creditor nations, with the ambition that then there would be a fiscal union. Well, it's unlikely now that that's ever going to happen, particularly considering the toll that the coronavirus has taken on the Italian and Spanish economies. Now, the ECB might be willing to buy their bonds, and they are certainly going to have to buy their bonds, but Europe needs a growth strategy. And what I find particularly interesting is that we continue to see, particularly among the macro strategist community, parallels with the Depression, and basically saying that the last time we've had unemployment at these levels was during the Depression. But they don't seem to point out the fact that the reason it was called the Depression was that unemployment in the USA in from about 1930 until 1940, or 1931, I think, until 1940, unemployment was higher than 14%. And in fact, it was 14% was the lower boundary. More often than not, it was in the order of 16, 17, even 20%. For a decade, we've had 1 month of high unemployment. It's hardly realistic to compare that to the Depression. But the reality is that when we look at unemployment in the Eurozone, well, then we get, I think, a better comparison. Because the average over the course of the last 30 years has been about 9.5%. Now, this has not been updated since the end of 2019, and it is quite likely now well in excess of 12%. So, anyone that is looking for a comparison for where there could potentially be depression, well, you don't have to look very much beyond Europe. That's one of the biggest, I think, are the most important characteristics that, in order to get Europe out of the funk that it's in order to improve the unemployment potential of the largest economic zone in the world, then there are going to have to be very significant changes. And while there's certainly a trend in terms of cohesion, and they've used all of the opportunities afforded by crises over the last decade for to move progressively towards additional cohesion, there's not much enthusiasm for it among the electorate. And there is nobody willing to propose a clear vision for how Europeans are going to get back to work. So that is where there is obviously the clearest potential for depression. Obviously, when we look at the Euro Stoxx index, this is a very disappointing performance over the course of the last 20 years. It is oversold in the short term, so we may get some process of support building, but there is no real potential that Europe is going to become the engine for global growth. Even the mid-cap sector in Germany, which has been a clear outperformer over the course of the last decade, it has much more in common with the mid-cap sectors in the UK, although the UK did pull back more. When we then think about small caps in the USA, we have a similar sharp contraction. This is obviously now a very accelerated decline. We are currently getting a rebound in all of these sectors. There is the potential that the lows are in fact in, but we're going to have to see that the lows hold during the first significant pullback. And when we look at some of the best performers, I really think that we are on the point of seeing that first big pullback. We've got wide overextensions, we've got long periods of short-term overbought conditions. It's increasingly likely that we are going to see some consolidation. And the continued strength of gold is also worth highlighting. It was up an additional $17 in here today, right at the upper side of its range against the dollar. When we then think about it in terms of the euro, with the euro declining, then gold is pushing on to new all-time highs. And when we just contract or just simply look at more longer-term data, the advance that it's put in over the course of the last year and a half in euro terms, where it is up almost 60%, is a real testament to just how much pressure is coming on the purchasing power of the euro, because the clear intention is to print the or to devalue the currency to the point where the massive debts that are outstanding in Europe are going to become less of a burden. When we think about the UK, the pound is also been under a little pressure in here today, so the gold price is pushing on to another new high. When we look at some of those UK listed gold shares, then they are surging higher. Polymetal being also a major producer of silver. But then when we think about silver prices, they have not yet been able to hold on to a rally to push on through the $16 area. Platinum had been higher in here today, but it wasn't quite able to hold on to its rally intraday. We continue to see that the total holdings of silver have been very steady and continue to push higher. It's the same thing with gold. One thing that I thought was particularly interesting in here today was the total holdings of palladium, which is a really very interesting chart. It's been trending downwards now for the better part of 5 years, and that is, I think, about the clearest evidence we can have that the supply deficit of palladium, which drove it to spectacular highs earlier on this year, was drawing physical supply out of the ETF sector. But Norilsk Nickel is now predicting that the deficit for palladium will be un excuse me the yes the deficit of palladium will be unwound this year. And it was in positive territory in here today. It has bounced from the region of the trend mean, but I think it's going to be difficult for it to sustain a move back above 2400, not a mind 2800, when the deficit situation is reversing. And that's part of the reason why it wasn't able to hold on to its highs in here today. The one thing that we can have a lot of confidence in is that central banks are going to continue to supply as much liquidity as is required, and perhaps considerably more than is required. And that is likely to boost demand for industrial resources, and particularly anything to do with infrastructure development. It's quite likely that infrastructure is going to represent a significant part of any stimulus that is permissioned going forward. What we are, however, starting to see is that agriculture prices are starting now to trend higher, and that has first become evident in rough rice. It broke up and out of its base formation in early January, found support in the region of the trend mean in February, and now it is improving upon that performance. Major exporters like Thailand have stopped exporting, and they're hoarding their supply for domestic use in response to the coronavirus. And certainly I can see that in a number of the Chinese supermarkets where we do a fair amount of our shopping, they're rationing rice. Then, when we think about, and of course, the fact that rough rice is a major staple food for the vast majority of the global population, then when we look at wheat prices, well, they have not yet broken out, but they are steadying in the region of the trend mean. There is an overall upward bias to trading, and a sustained move up and out of or above the 600 cent level would complete the base formation. So I do think that is a price series that is worth keeping an eye on. Soybeans are right at the lower side of their range and are offering the first evidence that support is starting to come back in. Corn is not simply a foodstuff, but it's also a major component in gasoline for the ethanol market. So it has pulled back in line with the decline in oil prices, but with oil starting to steady, it's beginning to also steady from around the 300 cent level. So there is spotty evidence of some pressure coming to bear on food prices generally, but they could be exacerbated by the fact that there is less supply of migrant workers. There are fewer people moving around in terms of migrants generally, but most particularly in terms of fruit picking and vegetable harvesting. So as we go into the summer period and as crops ripen, then there is going to have to be a significant movement of people to harvest. And without a significant number of people being able to do that, then there will be food shortages internationally. It may not be a particular focus in the West, but it's certainly going to be an issue for a number of the emerging markets. And I think, therefore, we do need to keep an eye on how currencies are performing. The fact that the USA is clearly supplying a great deal of liquidity should help to ease some of the liquidity conditions in the emerging markets. But the dollar is still firm, and Asian currencies may have found support around 100, but so far it hasn't been a particularly impressive rebound. The Latin America dollar index is heavily influenced by the Brazilian real and the Mexican peso, and it was at a new low in here today. Brazil is dealing with its own problems with the coronavirus and trying to get it under control, and the real is accelerating lower. So Mexico has been among the countries that have supplied the least amount of liquidity, but they are probably also going to have to step up their efforts, and the Mexican peso appears likely to continue to weaken in here. Then, of course, there are the countries that have been under the most pressure over the last couple of years, and the coronavirus just makes things worse. And certainly Turkey is among those, and so is Argentina. Well, we have to think that it's inevitable that that some of the debt that is represented by these countries is going to be restructured. And that may also form part of the solution for South Africa. The rand is continuing to trend lower. Now, there may be some additional measures to support these currencies, but they have got significant issues, and they had issues with debt before the problem. This is, I think, been the easiest way to look at what the potential fallout from the coronavirus is going to be. It's to look at things that people were worried about a year ago and just think that the coronavirus makes them worse. So that's certainly true of the most indebted of the emerging markets. It's also certainly going to be true of the fact that people were were very over-levered in the auto loan sector in the USA. It's obviously true too that Europe has got significant issues that it needs to deal with. When, for example, the problem with monitoring a number of these types of data series is that they're just not updated all that often. And the lag in data and the way that it is reported is obviously also going to ensure that the supply of data is going to significantly lag the response in stock markets. And the stock market is looking way beyond what data is producing right now. The big bet, therefore, is that we are going to have some form of treatment or vaccine come to market sooner rather than later. But that's still an uncertainty. And in between now and then, we are likely to see economies starting to open up again and businesses starting to open up again. But if what we've seen in China is any barometer, then consumer behavior is slower to get back online. And when businesses open up, are they going to need quite the same number of workers as they did before the lockdowns? Well, it probably means that the double-digit unemployment is going to come down quickly, but we are very unlikely to see the kind of high employment figures that we had in January anytime soon. It might take years to get back to the level of employment we had before the lockdowns and the coronavirus started. In the meantime, the quantity of money being printed to deal with the problem is only likely to continue to increase, and particularly if economic growth is slow to recover. And that represents a clear tailwind for gold prices. And today, with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.